think about a big thing you did before, whatever that big thing was, and then you embarrassedly fell flat on your face. Or maybe it was the opposite. Think about that big thing you did, and then it ended up being amazing. There's so much that goes into that on this weird thing called experience or ability, and it all crosses in between, and sometimes there's luck thrown in there. But for the most part, we either face failure or success. It makes me think about Ron Hall, one of our pseudo-community members, member of OIB back in the 90s when the OCA crisis happened. He went to a group of elders, or older people, I should say, and asked about this run that he wanted to do. He wanted to do it in support of the community over in Kanesatake. And he was told no. And his response to that was, I didn't come here to ask for your permission. I came here to ask for your advice and support. And maybe that's the best way we can sum up what we've been doing so far. We're doing something a little different. And to be honest, a lot of these candidates are, for the first time, putting their names forward. Or maybe they're doing it different this time and they put their names in before and they're just doing their best to do something different. How can you tell whether something's going to succeed or not? Who knows? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe the Facebook page works, maybe the write-up does work, doesn't. The whole point is you try something new. Today we have Andrea Alexander on the podcast. She is going to be running for council and this is something new for her. Much like other people are doing something new in just a different way. So here we're going to talk to her. She's going to tell us about her concerns, her vision, the things she wants to do for the community. Wait for it.
Hey, Aaron and Jared. Thank you guys for having me today. I'm happy to be here and to talk about my platform today. A lot of you know that I am the executive assistant to council right now. So just thank you guys for listening to me today. So my first platform that I want to talk about is what I value today and my priorities. I value honesty, integrity, and I want to inspire our younger people to step into leadership roles by acting on honesty and integrity and unity. So I guess with unity, it's about respect and being able to walk into those council chambers and just leave everything at the door and just make decisions best for the community and what the community wants. I think that this would create a healthier community and just a united community in general and would be a stepping stone towards unity. I also know that speaking with honesty, that's key to our community, and just being, that's also in the Constitution to speak with honesty. So I think that that's obviously a key one for me, and that's just who I am, is I'm honest and I'm pretty blunt with the people that I care about. So for me, I think I would speak with honesty to whoever's in council, whoever it is. I would disagree at times and agree if I agree with it. If it's with my morals, I would agree. But I also know what's right in my heart. So I would stand up for what I believe in and what I believe is good for the community. And that's just who I am.
Do you think honesty and morals are the same thing?
I think they go hand in hand.
What's an example?
So, like, standing up for what I believe in. So, maybe, like, something a decision that's made that isn't really best for the community, I would stand up for that and be like, no, that's not best for the community. I don't feel like that is best, even though a council member maybe believes that it would be.
And what if nothing happened? Like you, something was happening, whatever that is, like you're elected to office, you step in and say, look, I don't think this is probably the best way to go about it. And you put your foot down pretty hard. And that thing, let's just say that it goes forward anyways. What then? How do your values play into that?
I think just standing my point of view and just not letting, like just standing my point of view, I guess, standing my ground and just going forward. And it's... council is about quorum, right? Like if I stand for something and it doesn't happen, then there's really, like, as long as I believe in my heart that that's what is right, then just going forward and always bringing that up and saying that I don't agree.
Yeah, no, right. I've heard stories in the past about some council members have told me that there were terms or years of council where quorums were decided much before the council meeting started. And so what you effectively got was certain people were minimized on purpose, even though they're elected officials, the community wanted them in there. So every time their honesty, although they were being honest and saying, look, guys, we need this, that we can do better. And yet that was continually kiboshed or put to the side. Mm-hmm. Like, what would you say in response to that?
I would say just be who you are and stand up for what you believe in and just continue forward and know that you're making the best decisions for the community, and it's not always going to go your way, and you're not always going to get what you think is best. Sometimes quorum takes over and what's best doesn't really happen.
Okay.
Do you think that you have an ability as a counselor to communicate to the members if you're being pushed to the side on issues over and over again? Do you think that you have an ability as counselor to do that, or is that something that is currently,
like, me personally, or like in general?
If you got into council, mm-hmm. do you believe that you would have the ability to push back at that, the issue of basically deciding on
being minimized?
Yeah,
I think I do. I would just voice my opinion and not let whatever council's agreeing on affect me personally moving forward, and just know that I want what's best for the community, and that's my heart, is just wanting what's best for the community.
Good. Yeah, no.
So I also want to have an inclusive relationship with our members. So right now we have meetings with elders, that council meets with elders and just gets an update from them once a year. We don't have anything with the youth.
Our council gets updates from our elders once a year?
Yeah, like elders meetings come into council, right?
Right.
It's always on the agenda, so you do see it. But I mean, once a year they meet with the elders.
Do you think that should be addressed? Like, if you were to get like something to maybe look at, is to have more of a meet with
our... Yeah, definitely. Like, definitely quarterly.
I mean, our parents are the elders now, yeah, right? Right. Yeah. We're just kind of like, oh, once a year is okay.
Yeah, no, like definitely.
See you next year.
It definitely could be quarterly or whatever it is that the elders want. But I also think like including members in general and the youth, like having the youth come into council.
This is an important topic, and I'm glad you brought it up. So in the past, there's this, the trend is not the first for us to hear this or to be incorporated, say, look, we're going to have, it's like being called an open door policy for council,
yeah.
or anyone's welcome, or whatever the case, however they label it and tag it. But the question becomes, when I was younger, I was in university that was open. And it wasn't until the semester was done that I was able to do it. Then I had this lull of about, 2.5 weeks, and then I had to go, then my job started. Mm-hmm. So how do you make that stuff available for people, for youth, for people who want to be a part of that, when the council meetings are during work days?
Yeah, definitely. I think that we could have, elders meetings are at night as well, right? So we could do like a council meeting at night, change it once a month or something to a night meeting where we meet with whoever, like the youth or whoever's not available, members.
Right.
For me, I think that I would, for members, because it's always about youth and it's always about elders, and I think that there's also just members in general. So I think even the open door policy kind of thing, just having myself available, because I do like to speak to members. I do like to hear people out and advocate for members who need that. So I would make myself available for members whenever is needed. I think another important issue to talk about, and one of my platform items, is employment. For me, employment is a big thing. I've worked for WFN for the past 10 years on and off in different departments, and I believe that that's like a reason why I wanted to be in leadership, especially this last role that I've been in as the executive assistant to council. Employment just kind of gives you that inspiration and knowledge about WFN and wanting to go towards leadership roles. I've worked with 4 council interns who are now thinking going into leadership roles or coming back to WFN and working with WFN in general.
So who are the council interns?
So, well, I guess we've had Brianna Wilson, who, you know, she's worked with us. She was our first council intern, and then we had Adriana Turnett.
Oh, okay. These are like members that sign up to be like
they're
training ground of sorts.
So they work with council as summer students.
Right.
So just for May to August kind of thing, and they learn how council runs, and they go to meetings with council members, and they also learn my job as well, how I assist council.
So you're training them.
Yep.
How council works.
Yeah, and then
you're training them on how your job works at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're working with me, and they also work with council. So if council wants to take them on different meetings or to different things, then they go with council to different things, and they come to all council meetings and policy day meetings and all of that. So they're kind of learning the whole ropes of the government. They also have worked with director of operations and legal, just learning the whole round of the government.
It's interesting because I think back to like my teaching days. And you know, the part of your degree called the practicum, mm-hmm. right, where you go in and you actually teach, but it's not, you're not an employee yet, but you're in the ropes and you're learning it hands on. I guess, you know, in trades, you're out in the field after you go to school. And practicums look different from different. Some schools go 6 weeks, go back to school, 6 weeks in practicum, go back to school. For me, it was 3.5 months right out of school, and that was it. And I just remember, like, of course, you're nervous, but it didn't take long to understand how things worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, every school has varying policies on discipline or on, you know, garbage or whatever the case may be. But once you get in there, it was probably about 2 weeks and then you were fine. The rest was like really kind of tuning your teaching skill, but in terms of learning how things worked. And I'm curious if that's the same thing like with council. Like were these people, interns, come in, or, you know, when you first started your job, you know, were you like 6 months down the road being like, I still don't know where the photocopier is?
Yeah, there's definitely, like, it's more to it than just like administration and all of that, right? Like they're getting to know council in general as well, and like the staff, and there's different events that they're planning throughout the summer that we keep going, and we try to get membership involved in that. So they're kept pretty busy, and then they're learning the council quarterlies and all that. They're working on that with me, and so they get a lot of experience in this position. So I think this is the part of the job that I really enjoy, is working with these young people and inspiring them to step into leadership roles. And I think that's key for me, is inspiring our younger people and knowing that that age and doesn't really matter. It's just if you're passionate about your community and passionate about wanting the best for the community, then you can do whatever you
right. Yeah. Cool.
And then last one is education. And I don't mean education as let's send everyone to school, but I mean educating, bringing our members back to our community by teaching them self-government agreement, constitution, all of that, just so that they're equipped for coming into employment or whatever it is, even our history and learning our culture, just that kind of education. Because I think that people always think of education as just sending people back to school, but in that way. So maybe having classes or courses at night, workshops about the Constitution in like a simpler
constitutional
form.
Literacy.
Yeah,
that's been talked about for how many years now, and I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, simpler form kind of thing.
It's not that hard to do.
Yeah, and self-government agreement, all of that. I think that's just to get our people engaged, because I think people have questions on our Constitution and our self-government agreement in general. So, just bringing that back, and you know, we have a lot of educated young people out of the community right now, and just I think just bringing them back to our community with because we did educate them, so bringing them back to work for our community,
enriching our own community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First thing Seashell did when they signed their self-government agreement back in the day is they got on the phone and they phoned every single one of their members who were educated and had moved away because there was no opportunity. So you're kind of self-sufficiency with our own members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's key, because I mean I get calls about employment and stuff in general. So I think that that's something that people want addressed, is employment and educating our members. So yep. So those are my three, is unity, honesty, and inspiring through employment and education, and have an inclusive relationship with members. So I hope that I answered that question as best as possible. So
let's talk about your age.
Okay.
There's been a lot of talk in the community about a lot of things about all the candidates, as usual. Sometimes you get some of it, sometimes you get all of it. Unfortunately, Jared and I are not in this loop. But something you and I had talked about when I approached you to come forward with this, and something that we've heard kind of reverberating a little bit, is your age.
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners out there, I mean, I'll let her disclose that at her own time, but Andrea's not a teenager, but I just thought it was interesting, you're an adult, obviously, that this was a thing, and this came up, and that kind of tied in with experience, as you said, and so I'm wondering if you feel comfortable talking about that.
Yeah, so I am 31, I will be 32 this year, and I have worked with council for the last two terms. So I worked with the first council in 2015, and then this council. And I think that age is so, it's funny because, and experience actually, because we have some amazing young leaders who are still considered youth or 21 or whatever. They're like, they're young and they're amazing leaders. So I feel like that's kind of unfair to even point out an age. But experience wise, I have attended 127 council and committee meetings, and so I know the drill on that, on how council operates and the day-to-day administration and the government side of council.
Are you required to show up at band meetings, like, as part of your job?
Yes, and I do attend all band meetings. So I have to be at all band meetings, special membership meetings, and quarterly.
So you're getting a lot of hours put in.
Yeah, I attend all of that. And then I'm learning what's going on in the government and what council's working on, and then assisting them on that. So
how do you feel about that, about, you know, that your age is kind of being seen, or potentially being seen, as like a limitation?
Yeah, I think that we actually have had some leaders who have started as council members as young as me or even younger. So
we were just talking about the youngest councilor ever was 26, I think, or
Ted Clough, and yeah, I believe he was. Our listeners out there are members, correct us if we're wrong, please, but I think he was 26 or 24.
Yeah, and then Rob, right? I feel like he was younger, but I mean,
like Rob Louie?
Yeah.
When he got in years ago, yeah.
Yeah, like his first council.
I don't know.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I guess, I just think that's kind of unfair, but I mean, everyone is obviously allowed their own opinion, but yeah, I think that I have a lot to offer.
What's unfair about it?
Well, it's just because there are some that are, that have started young, right?
Yeah.
And then, so my age, I'm actually a little bit older than some who have started, right? So that's what I mean by unfair.
I think too that whole, like, when they say youth, there's like these youth grants, there's these youth like scholarships, these youth awards, youth conferences. Mm-hmm. And every time you see the age, it always lists the age. Like, you don't see that for the adult conferences. Mm-hmm. Like, we're having an adult conference, ages 36 to 44. And if you're not that, then you can get out. But these youth conferences are like 19 to 29, 19 to 28.
Yeah.
Like, these are people with entire families and mm-hmm. educations and their own businesses. They have mortgages. And they're like, ah, you're still a youth.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. you can attend this conference, you're a youth.
Yeah, I think we're in a different age as well, right? So, like, nowadays... more people are stepping into leadership roles younger. Like, I think there's a chief around that's like 24.
There was a chief of Salto First Nation. Yeah. When he was 25, he got elected chief. Mm-hmm. And he was, before that, he was in his trades. He was in his third year of his carpentry, and he got elected to chief. Mm-hmm. And I actually met him and I talked to him a couple times, and he was pretty fluent in his mm-hmm. own, his decision-making, his experience, the council definitely regarded him as a leader, and he was just a young guy. It was quite odd. The one thing I will kind of add into that, not to steal your voice in this, but I think it's less about age and more about tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
How hard am I going to work to learn what's in front of me?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like it's inherent to, like, if I'm in school, that Jared, you know, is Red Seal now and in his own right. And there's, we have all these other people in our community that have done the same. And whatever is in front of you, if you're not willing to work at it, work hard, and have that tenacious attitude about it, then I election or not election, or if I'm on a hiring committee or whatever the case is, like, I wouldn't want you representing mm-hmm. us. And so I think that's important for our membership to consider is work ethic, tenacity, and what's your track record? Like, are you willing to go the distance? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, in my mind, actually, in my own opinion, is that that's more valuable than someone's age.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends about leadership and what it means to me, and I was just, we were talking about how leadership to me is standing up for our people and just being there for people in times that they're that's needed, like funerals or whatever it is. And like, my own personal opinion is, like, I've been placed in a leadership role within my own family due to trauma. I sit on a residential school committee and speak out about residential school impacts to
the nation committee, the CLP, yeah. Indiana Residential yeah. School Committee, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I sit on that, and then I speak out about intergenerational traumas and all of that, and represent my mom who attended residential schools. So I think that leadership is also about just standing up for what you believe in and being there for the community and moving forward in a healthier way.
Andrew, we're gonna take a turn on this, and we're gonna go into our question period. Okay. But thanks for sharing all that stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm sure more people will have more questions for you as time goes on here before the election. So as you've been listening, as your own words, you know that this part of the podcast, part of the show, we ask questions of our own. So I'm going to let Jared kick it off again, if he's okay with that.
Yeah, probably kick it off with the same question. Yeah, I've just been trying to cover, as far as community goes, addictions and the drug houses that we're all aware of that are in our housing blocks and our housing streets, our subsidized housing streets and everything. And as well as the property damage that's come recently from that. How would you tackle that as a counselor, and what experience do you have with that personally?
Well, I think that, like I just said, I do sit on a residential school committee that talks about intergenerational trauma. And I think a lot of things start with trauma in that way. I think that for my brother, he went into rehab, and you had to see which is an issue for me, you had to see the addictions counselor 6 times before he would even refer you to go into treatment. And I think that that's kind of...
Is that standard? Like, is that, like, just with the province? Like, do you have to see a counselor 6 times?
No, that's just... I think that's a WFN thing. So, I'm not actually sure if it's standard. That's just what he was told from whoever the addictions counselor was at the time. So I don't think they even explained why you had to see this person six times. So he had to wait six times before he could go into treatment, which, you know, some people want to get help right away. Some people are like, okay, I want to get clean and I want to go now. And then six times, like, then you're just back in it. And then also, you have to be clean for, I believe it's 6 weeks before you can get into treatment as well. And so people end up just lying and being like, yep, I've been clean for 6 weeks, because they're so desperate and they want to get in there and get some help. So I think these things need to be changed, whether it's with the province or with WFN. I'm not really sure what the process is on that. These are things that that I know from my brother, because when we were trying to get him in there, there was these barriers that kind of held him back and made it more complicated. So those are things that I would love to see addressed. And then just also afterwards, coming out of treatment, there's not a whole lot of programs. Yes, there's Wellbriety, but I mean, like, just more support when you're coming out, because you're coming back to the same community, you're coming back to the same friends, and there just needs to be more support on that side as well.
Yeah, that's sobering.
I'm gonna have to look into that myself. I haven't heard that from anybody else before, so.
I mean, if that's the case, I mean, there's certain things that can be addressed swiftly when you're in positions of power, like, and rightly so, right? Like, I'm talking elected positions. So I guess my question is, why hasn't that been addressed up to that point? Or if it has, or what, we don't know the details, but that's, that's troubling to hear.
That doesn't even, like, if you had to go six times, I mean, like, one in four doses of illicit drugs have fentanyl in
them. There's so many
like that. So it's like you're just literally just playing. You're just literally just playing the slots, and hoping that, like, you make it long enough, and then you have to lie about sobriety, which very few people are going to be. Yeah, that's depressing.
Yeah, so I think that's a big, big issue for me, especially when I had my brother trying to get in there, so.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for, we appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks very much for sharing
that. For sure, it can't be easy, for sure. Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Maybe we will.
Maybe we will. okay, so next question here. So we've been asking every candidate about accountability. It doesn't matter where you go. It's in the news right now with our own federal government and what accountability looks like, could look like, should look like, how accountability could be better, because, you know, there's obviously, even when you have things in place, things still happen, like the current SNC-Lavalin affair. And so there's always this idea that should be talked about accountability. And we talked about responsibility, time, and finances is usually where it's measured. So my question to you, is if you were to get elected to office, how do you see accountability being factored into your responsibility? So your role, your space, what you're doing as a council member?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I think everyone knows that right now council has a council quarterly, where we have what every meeting that council has attended, and the finances. So I think just to up that, we could have more accountability on what they learned at these meetings. If they had to travel to Vancouver or wherever they're traveling to, bringing back something to the community maybe, and just presenting on what they got out of that workshop or conference or whatever. And then financially, I think right now it's pretty, like, it says everything, like your travel and everything like that, and you can actually, we made it so that we do post their GLs on the WFN website, That's more recent. So we're starting to post their GL so that you can see their general ledgers, everything that they've spent on hospitality or travel and meetings and all of that. So that's also available. I think that is good. We also start in the last 4 years, we have a policy that just keeps them accountable with their finances as well.
So you're tackling, like you talked about meetings a little bit in finances. So when you go on trips, there's per diems, right?
Yep.
Do you think per diems should be canceled in favor of a credit card so that you can know exactly what they spent and when? Or to say, look, you can only spend this for X or this, or maybe not the credit card at all, but say, let's reduce the per diem. Like, is that something you think should be addressed?
Yeah, I think a credit card would actually be pretty good, because actually council doesn't have credit cards. They all don't have a government one. Council doesn't, but they do have the corporate side credit cards. I believe they do. Some of them do. But I think that would help, because yeah, it would track what's being spent and just having more accountability there. Because yeah, you could just get a check or per diem and then you could spend it wherever kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's a good idea to do credit cards again. They haven't had them in a while. Like, it's been like, even last council didn't have credit cards. So I think that's a good idea. And then meetings wise, like just reporting back to.
Do you think there should be a limit on trips?
A limit, like per diem wise?
No, just the amount of trips councils can go on, conferences they attend.
Like I feel like it needs to be relevant to what you're working on, right? So say you're representing Spring Salmon, then maybe more financial meetings or conferences like that, and more relevant to what you're focused on, and then like community, so like health and wellness conferences and stuff, just limiting them that way so that they're more focused on what they're supposed to be focused on kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm kind of like, I'm proposing, or not proposing, but throwing the idea out there. Like, say, look, you got five conferences mm-hmm. per year, or four conferences per year.
Yeah.
Pick the best ones that are out there, because they mm-hmm. are like, you can see which ones are the best, and then go to those, as opposed to, you know, last election we had, there was concerns brought up, and there still be concerns brought up about trips. And I mean, like, that's not inherent, like, just in case anyone's listening, that's not inherent to Indigenous communities. It's any organization where there's a budget. This is something that is addressed. I mean, the BC legislature just had this addressed with the clerk of the House and with the Speaker of the House, and things that were going on there, and buying wood splitters was the famous, but they were also going on trips, mm-hmm. and there was nothing was held accountable for it.
The yeah. spoke suits and all that.
Like, it was just, that was like a little more like crazy, I guess, in some ways. But I mean, like, I this idea of accountability for trips, I think is really, I think it's relevant for sure.
Yeah, and it is membership's money, right? So I think that just being careful with that and being accountable to our members with what we're doing and in our day-to-day meetings and activities is good. And that's obviously, transparency is a big thing. So I think that's important for us as leaders or whoever gets elected, kind of. So
cool. Last question. I think we got lined up here on governance, or sorry, culture.
Yeah. I can take that question. So when you're coming in as a counselor, how do you think that you'll apply culture to policy and culture to your day-to-day tasks as a counselor?
Yeah. So right now we, I know I'm using a lot of right nows, because that's I work
it's with your, council. It's your job.
Yeah,
it's fine.
We I think that it would be good to bring back language, learning our language, like starting from the beginning and learning our language again. We did have language classes with council at one point as well. I think bringing that back would be good. just starting new again, right? Starting fresh again. So that's something that I would like for language culture wise, into our policies and stuff. I think that for that culture is everything. It's who we are and kind of how we function. So I think that that's important to bring that back into our policies as well. What are you
like? How though? How would you put culture into policy?
So I would say putting maybe founding it on our history more, and it's tough because I'm a learner and I'm not super like I'm learning the culture again. It was taken away from me as an intergenerational survivor, right? So for me, I'm just relearning everything, and I don't claim to know everything. So I think that that would be something that I would want to hear from members on their input into that as well. So
yeah, I can definitely agree there that it can be hard coming from, like, a lot of our family traditions just aren't, they're not well recorded, or the people that know about them are hard to get a hold of. And so myself, I've been learning language is something too that we don't actually have for the membership except at that place in Penticton, right?
Language House.
Yeah, and so it would be nice for more than just council, right? For mm-hmm. members as well to have a place to learn. Mm-hmm. And,
well, I don't think there's no reason why we shouldn't have our own language house as a community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would make sense. Especially for me, I've got kids and a schedule, and it would be hard for me to go out of my way to go somewhere like that for a day class or whatever they do.
It ends up being like 3 days or something like that of the week that you're there, right? So it's
I do like it that we are we do have language in the schools in Census Houston, learning that. I mean, I have a 5-year-old who comes home and speaks Okanagan, counts to 10 and all of that. So I think that that's awesome, just starting there and reteaching and putting that back into us as our people and as Silk people. So I think that that's important. So just relearning again.
Cool. Jared's pointing at me. I don't know what else to say. I think we're done. Are we not done?
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that's it. Andrew, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. You're on leave right now, right? So it's your vacation time. So thanks for taking time to sit down and talk with us. And thanks for having us in your house. All the best to you in this upcoming election. Good luck tomorrow, actually. The speeches are tomorrow. And at the polls, ballot box. So white limlim.
Once again, you've listened to the WFN Pop-Up Podcast, episode number 5. This time we interviewed Andrea Alexander, candidate for council. If you're listening to this and you are a slated candidate for the upcoming election, we want to hear from you. We'd like you to come on. We'd love for you to come on, actually. We've tried to reach out to as many people as possible. I believe we have one more person we're trying to find contact info so we can get a hold of them for counselors to come on the show, potential counselors. If that's you, please get in contact with us on Facebook, through email. You can get in contact with me through my website. Heck, you can even stop by the house if you want and knock at the door. If you know someone who doesn't know about this and they're a slated candidate for council, please tell them. Tell them to contact us. We'd love to get everyone on the show. Ideally, we'd like to get every candidate. If that doesn't happen, that's fine. At least we tried. Guys, stay in touch. For the next podcast, episode 6, we'll be interviewing Lori Hogabone. Wait for it.